It's heresy, I know, but I can't help feeling that there's something intrinsically ridiculous about the notion that children, virtually without exception, will benefit from a higher education. Indeed, even the idea of requiring every child to attend high school until the age of 18 seems fundamentally daft. Some people are simply not intellectually equipped to earn a worthwhile college degree. Others are more practically or technically inclined and would find great benefit from learning a trade as an apprentice or studying for a profession such as engineering, architecture, the law and the like as an articled clerk. For many such youngsters, the final years in high school are in truth a tedious waste of time. Yet they're obliged to mark time for an extra 2 years or so simply to obtain a high school diploma, without which any meaningful employment is exceedingly hard to find. Surely it would be better for young people who wish to leave high school to take up an apprenticeship or become an articled clerk to be awarded an intermediate school leaving diploma or its equivalent. The fact of the matter is that this system worked admirably a couple of generations ago. Indeed, one might objectively observe that as far as the trades are concerned, the average standard of craftsmanship was markedly superior to that which we have today. Nor was the competence of lawyers, architects, engineers, or the like in the slightest degree inferior to graduates from today's law schools and universities. Abraham Lincoln became a lawyer as an articled clerk. So too did Senator Sam Irwin, who chaired the U.S. Senate's investigation of the Watergate scandal. Both were notably capable attorneys. After Irwin had been called to the bar, he graduated from Harvard Law School, but that was mainly to polish his political resume. Similarly, St. Barnes Neville Wallace, Britain's premier scientist during World War II, left school at 17 to become an engineering apprentice. Among Barnes Wallace's most famous inventions was the bouncing bomb that enabled the Royal Air Force dam busters crews to destroy Germany's hydroelectric dams on the River Ruhr. He was also responsible for the revolutionary geodesic design of the fuselage and wing structures that gave the RAF's Wellington bombers its uniquely robust airframe. Photographs of Wellingtons that brought home by their crews safely after sustaining extraordinarily heavy damage are truly impressive. The sole beneficiaries of our obsession with higher education are, in reality, the folks employed in the educational industrial complex itself. Teachers, college university instructors, academics, researchers, above all the grossly overstaffed ranks of administrators, together with the pandering politicians who advocate universal free college tuition. The losers, however, are legion. They are the children, many of them later become high school dropouts who cannot read, write, or do simple math. They are the college graduates whose worthless degrees have loaded them with student loans and landed them with jobs such as coffee shop barristers. They are the voters too ignorant of the history of the country to make an informed choice. The philosopher George Santayana's observation that those who cannot remember the past are doomed to repeat it applies just as much to commerce and industry as it does to political affairs. It thus seems reasonable to conclude that among the biggest losers are the businesses unable to find adequately qualified recruits. And as a consequence, many of America's companies are run by managers strong in theory but woefully short of practical experience in the ways their industries work. None of this should surprise folks familiar with the laws of supply and demand. Indeed, it should have been obvious to the Solons, who proposed the notion of universal higher education, that a vast expansion of the process would likely result in a similar decline in the quality of the product. The reason for this is that teaching is no different from any other field of endeavor. The cadre of two truly gifted teachers is limited. The pool of capable teachers is considerably larger, but nonetheless, far smaller than the number of mediocrities. And even the mediocrities far outshine those at the very bottom of the barrel, who by virtue of the insatiable demand for instructors hold down jobs in all branches of education, including our colleges and universities, as a glance at the average prospectus amply demonstrates. At the time it was coined, the aphorism, "those who can do and those who can't teach," was recognised as a tongue-in-cheek jibe aimed at an honourable but occasionally pompous profession. Today it might well read, "those who can do, those who can't teach, and those who can't teach do too." As a computer programmer who decided against going to college explained, "it seemed foolish to spend tens of thousands of dollars to be taught by a person who knows less about my subject than I do. It's not an accident that so many in Silicon Valley entrepreneurs are college dropouts." And this sums up what's wrong with the whole notion of universal higher education. Our colleges and universities have abandoned the time-hollowed function of teaching a relatively small intellectual elite to think. Indeed, they've adopted a role which, with few exceptions, largely in the realm of the sciences, they are largely unsuited, imparting practical skills to equip young people to do jobs in industries, trades, and professions that were hitherto responsible for training their own workforces. Sad to say, in view of the political positions of all our political parties, things seem destined to get worse before they get better.